This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show starts now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It is the Fan Upstate. Howdy, y'all. Welcome in. Great to be with you for three more hours of sports talk, fun, and shenanigans here on a Friday morning, a conference championship Friday morning. Yes, indeed. We got a fistful of games tomorrow, and you better enjoy them, because after this, we have totally meaningless bowl games that nobody cares about.
The average fan, and playoffs. Average fan check out right now. They checked out last week when their team was done.
I mean,
diehards are going to watch. People excited about the playoffs are going to watch. But if your team's not in it, are you still watching, or are you already making plans? Okay, I'm going shopping Saturday. I'm doing this. I'll check the scores later. That type of thing.
I don't know. I think that...
I know that's not your way of thinking. So, I mean, and I get that.
Last year's national championship game recorded 28 million viewers. That means that roughly 8% of the country, 7% of the country watched that game.
But I'm talking about championship games. I'm not talking about the national championship.
Yeah, game. I mean, if your team's out of a bowl game, maybe. But I also think that, and it's... I mean, the Armada knows bowl. And I imagine that the Armada is comprised largely of people who are going to watch every playoff game, even if their team's not in them.
All right. So both my college teams are not playing this weekend, but there are only two games that I'm interested in.
ACC title game, Big Ten title game?
No, I'm not even interested in the Big Ten title game. ACC and SEC. I want to see Clemson lose, and I want to see if... Georgia can beat Texas.
Why are you not interested in the Big Ten title game? That's your conference. Don't you want to see what the Ducks and the Nittany Lions?
I saw what Ohio State did to Penn State. There's no chance Penn State upsets Oregon. So no, I mean, because as I pointed out, not a conference guy. I don't care. Ohio State's not playing for the Big Ten title. I don't care. Clemson and SMU, I do care for a couple of reasons. One, I want Clemson to lose just because the fans are so mean to me, and I've always been kind to them. I've never done anything ever that would make them mad, because I don't do that. I am above that sort of thing, and I would never, ever do that. And I picked SMU to win, so I want that to happen, and I also picked Texas to win, so I want to watch that, because as you pointed out today about you, and I'm going to point it out about me, it's about me, and I only care about me being right.
Well, obviously, we're aware of that.
I'm not right very often, but there's a couple chances tomorrow for me to be right. The sad part is I think both those games are on at the same time. They're both on at 8 o'clock, I believe.
No, the SEC championship game's in the daytime. It's at 4 o'clock.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
What's the other game on at 8 o'clock then?
ACC
That's probably championship the, it's probably the Big Ten title.
The schedule tomorrow, the schedule starts today at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
You've got Western Kentucky, Jayville State, UNLV, Boise State is tonight at 8 o'clock. That game matters a lot. Boise State wins, they're catching a bye. So that you have a game tonight that impacts not just the playoffs, but the top four. And on top of that, there's a lot of belief that if Boise State loses this game, they're out of the playoffs entirely. They're at 10. They are in a rough spot. We've talked about SMU. Boise State's behind them. So if Ward Manuel, the CFB Playoff Selection Committee chairman, has already said that there is a chance SMU would fall behind Bama, you and I and everybody else knows Boise State certainly is falling behind Alabama in that case. So that game matters. And then Tulane Army tonight at 8 o'clock as well from West Point. That one's kind of interesting as well because both Tulane and Army are again, outside looking in, they would need a couple of teams to get their asses handed to them. But Army at number 24 is a technically a live threat to sneak in as the fifth-ranked team. So you got games that matter tonight. Tomorrow at noon is the Big 12 title game in Arlington. You have got the SEC title game at 4 o'clock. And then you've got both the Big 10 and ACC championship games at 8 p.m. And we're going to talk about all of these games over the course of the show. But it is 7:05 and some change in the morning. You have just seconds more than 54 minutes to get up and get your sleepy behind to the office to get ready for your workday. But more importantly, to take that first break, to walk down the hall, to step out. Don't step outside. It's too cold to take your break outside today. All right, go to the break room today. Stand against the far wall where the boss can't see you when he comes creeping down the hallway, making sure everybody's being productive at 8:15 a.m. No, go take your break and talk some sports with your coworkers. But see, you're going to do that, you got to know what's going on. And if you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, you came to the right place because we do this. It's the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your friends, with your family, with your coworkers, with your dog, whoever you spend your workday with. This is what you will be talking about. Let's dive right into item number one. A little Thursday night football. Got the NFL week started off last night, and it was a banger of a game. 34-31, the Detroit Lions improved to 12-1 with a dub over NFC North rival the Green Bay Packers. Detroit had the ball inside of a minute left to play. They face fourth down with the game tied at 31. They needed to pick up 1 yard. A stop from Green Bay would give them the ball back. No timeouts, but about 40 seconds to figure out how to get into field goal range for the win themselves. But Detroit, in a model of grit and determination, pick up the first down, run the clock down to just seconds remaining, and boot a game winner to walk off the pack. Jared Goff, 32 of 41, 283 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. David Montgomery, 14 carries for 51 yards and a touchdown as well. Wide receiver Tim Patrick had not scored in 1,000 years, did it twice last night, caught 2 out of 3 touchdowns from Jared Goff. Jahmyr Gibbs was the recipient of the other touchdown. Jordan Love didn't have a bad day, didn't have a good day. 12 of 20, 206 yards, and 1 touchdown. The Packer fans thought that Jordan Love was going to ball out. Packers have been very good on the road, by the way, but they dropped one last night. Josh Jacobs, 18 carries, 66 yards, scored 3 times for the Green Bay Packers. The other touchdown was a Tucker Kraft touchdown. But that wasn't Tucker Kraft's shining moment last night. Did you see the kip up, Lonzo? Did you see the Tucker Kraft's kip up?
I did not. That was a little late for me.
Tucker Kraft caught a pass working right to left across the field, hurdled a defender, a good hurdle too, hurdled a defender, but then the free safety for Detroit came over and popped him out of the air. I mean, flat backed him. Well, everybody, you could hear the audible, oh!
Actually, yes, I have seen that. I saw that this morning on SportsCenter.
And then Tucker Kraft on his back puts the hands on the ground over his head and hits a full sail Drew McIntyre kip up off the canvas to get back and immediately shut the Lions fans right back up. That really was the only thing from that game I cared about. It was a slapper of a game. Absolute banger of a game, but that was cool.
That was a really good hit, too.
It was a great hit.
Yeah, so
But in that moment, when you've got a stadium full of people that are losing their mind because you just took that shot, there is no better way to climb back into it than to hit the kip up that says, your finishing move does not affect me. You just gave me the best shot you have, and I'm still just literally jumping up off the ground and counting 3, 2, 1, Claymore. Spectacular kip up there from Tucker Kraft. Lions win 34-31 walking off. Let's go to item number two. Two stadium stories out of Major League Baseball. One of them out of Tampa, Florida. One of them out of Las Vegas, Nevada. We start down in Tampa where the Tampa Bay Rays potential new ballpark got a boost last night when the St. Petersburg City Council voted to approve the bonds necessary to finance a $1.3 billion new stadium. Now, that is only part of the deal. The Pinellas County Commission must also decide whether to approve in its share of the stadium. They will vote later in December. Meanwhile, the Rays will play this season in the New York Yankees spring training site because Tropicana Field was jacked up from hurricane damage during this offseason. The Rays said it is impossible to play at the Trop next year and maybe not again until 2026. If that is true or not, I don't know. It may have just been a way to push St. Pete and Pinellas County to go ahead and approve the funding because, and this is where it's going to get very interesting, and a story that I will be following. I don't know how much play it's going to have for you guys, but I am interested in it. The people in St. Pete and Pinellas County are not super excited about this project. They are looking at the potential between the county and St. Petersburg. They are looking at the potential for $2-ish billion. Of public money to go into this stadium to the point that there's a big controversy. I've got a friend who's a sheriff's deputy down in Pinellas County, and I had this conversation with him a couple of days ago. They were real mad about the vote by St. Pete Council last night because apparently St. Pete Council kind of like announced the meeting around this vote very late and held it late at night, trying to dissuade the public from coming out. They think this is kind of shady, underhanded to approve this $1.3 billion stadium. The stadium is part of a $6.5 billion project that is going to be built around the stadium itself. So we'll see what happens. This has got the opportunity to get nasty down in St. Pete. The other stadium news is that the Las Vegas Stadium Authority approved a lease, non-relocation, and development agreement yesterday to clear the last major hurdles for the now Southern California Athletics to make their final move to Las Vegas, Nevada. The last major hurdles cleared last night for the $1.75 billion stadium on the Las Vegas Strip that will bring MLB to an expanding sports market. Steve Hill is the CEO and president of the Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, said in remarks yesterday, "It's a really significant day in Las Vegas. Today's a real milestone. I think we should recognize that and celebrate that." Now, they are not done yet. There are some other details that do have to be worked out, including a development agreement with Clark County, but the plan right now is for groundbreaking to take place in the spring to allow a scheduled opening for the 2028 season, meaning that the A's will be playing 25, 26, and 27 in a minor league ballpark. Could you imagine busting your bootay to get yourself to MLB? And you get drafted in, and then you get sent to play your Major League Baseball in a minor league ballpark. Could you imagine being a 14, 15-year Major League Baseball vet? You're winding down your career. You're hoping for one more run, and then you get sent to Vegas, and you spend your twilight years in Major League Baseball playing in a minor league stadium because John Fisher and the A's are so damn greedy and inept that they would rather push you to play in front of maybe 12,000 people in a minor league stadium instead of just sucking it up and getting it done and staying in Oakland until you move to Vegas. Also, that they don't have to pay a few $100 million out of their multi-billion-dollar wealth. Yeah, well, have fun. The A's won't have fans for a very long time. They'll get them back when they move to Vegas, but they're going 3 years without fans. I don't know if that matters or not. Finally, item number three. We talked about this a little bit back in hour number one. I'm sure it'll come back up later on as well. But the North Carolina Tar Heels fired Mac Brown earlier this week. Mac Brown, of course, had been the Heels coach for a long time, including two different stints, one before he went to Texas and one after leaving Texas and making his way back to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Well, they relieved Mac Brown of his duties, which, respectfully, makes sense. North Carolina the last 2 years have had about as much talent on the roster as they have had since, I don't know, Julius Peppers played there a couple of decades ago. And they really were disappointing under Mac Brown. I mean, I had lofty ambition for the North Carolina Tar Heels, and they just never achieved it. So they decided to move on. And now we have the first name that is reportedly in consideration to replace Mac Brown. It is 72-year-old Bill Belichick. Now, just for the sake of fairness, let me also point out that he is 72-year-old six-time Super Bowl winner. Bill Belichick, he was out of football this year after leaving the Patriots following the 2023 season, which, yes, he left the Patriots. Let's be clear. Bob Kraft was going to fire him. Hoodie, you can walk out on your terms or you can walk out on ours, but you are walking out. Well, sources told ESPN yesterday that Belichick, who spent his entire career in the NFL, wants to coach again and is open to listening to people at both the college and NFL levels. The Tar Heels were 44-33 under Mac Brown, dating back to his second stint, which began in 2019. They were 6-6 this season. Belichick is the biggest name to emerge in the North Carolina coaching search, but there are other college coaches who North Carolina is interested in. Tulane's John Summerall was near the top of North Carolina's wish list. Iowa State's Matt Campbell, Georgia defensive coordinator Glenn Schumann, and Steve Wilks, who was the Cardinals head coach in 2018, the Panthers interim coach in 2022, and was a volunteer assistant this season for the Charlotte 49ers, could make his way down there. Steelers offensive coordinator Arthur Smith is a UNC grad. He was asked but declined the Tar Heels' invitation for an interview because he wants to remain in the NFL and has sights on a head coaching career. We will see if Hoodie ends up taking the job, is even end up being offered the job, because I just don't know. But we'll see. We'll talk more about that. All right, let's run to a break. When we come back, we are going to spend quite a bit of time breaking down tomorrow's Atlantic Coast Conference Championship game. And I think it's important to do two different angles on this game. The first angle is, what's the game look like? What does Clemson need to do to win this game? The second angle is, what does Clemson need to do to win this game? Because a win puts them into the college football playoffs. And before the season began, I asked Clemson fans to chime in on the show. What is your definition of a successful season? What would you consider a result that is deemed successful? And the primary answer, the answer we got that I think was the most popular answer, was make the playoffs, win a game. Does that make this the biggest game that Dabo Swinney has coached since the last time he coached for a national championship? The answer to me is yes. But is it to you, Clemson fans? I'll ask you when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas Fan Phone is 844-FANFONE. That's 844-326-3663. The text line is 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the air. And the Ray Memorial Hotline is available for you as well. The Ray Memorial Hotline is available by going to the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, going to the Fan Upstate page by searching the Fan Upstate in the search bar at the top. Once you get there, click on the little heart icon. So every time you open the Audacy app, you can come straight to the Fan Upstate page. And on the middle of the Fan Upstate page in the Audacy app is a little circle button with a microphone inside of it. If you push that button, you can record a 30 to 60 second voice note that comes directly to the great one and I will also tell you Captain America, Captain America, Chris Evans down the hall. There it is. I've done this before. Captain America, Chris Evans down the hall, and I had a conversation yesterday. We're also going to be setting up, if going in that direction is just too complicated for you, we are also going to be setting up a phone line that will be available to you. 24/7, 365. So you can call it at any time and leave us a voice message. I will let you know when we get that running. Hopefully in the next week or two, we'll have that up and at your leisure. But until then, the Ray Memorial Hotline is up and running for you. Go to the Audacy app, AUDACY. Go to the Fan Upstate page. Click on the little circle button with the microphone in it and leave us that 30 to 60 second voice message and give us your thoughts on just about anything. Now, the reason that I opened this segment of the show.
Hey, what happens if they go over 60?
You can't. It cuts you off at 60. Like, once it gets to 60, you're done.
So I challenge
you. Now, you can leave another one.
I challenge you, listeners, to have so much to say that you get cut off in a creative way.
You can immediately record another one. I will say this: there is no limit to the number of messages that you're allowed to send.
And then it cuts off, so we don't know what you were actually calling, Rob.
Do it again.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Rob, you. Have at it. And for the record, I don't particularly care if you say in your message. That's why I have the button. All right, have at it. I don't care.
Don't compliment him though, because he hates that. So don't stroke the ego. Don't tell him what a wonderful person.
Rob Brown, you handsome son of a. Have at it. All right, have at it. The Ray Memorial Hotline only on the Odyssey app. Go to the Fan Upstate page. Click the circle button.
By the way, you don't have to talk exclusively to him. I mean, you can say something.
Say whatever
to
you
me,
want.
You know, or say something to Cole or to Diesel.
Whatever you want. It's there for you. The point is for you to say anything and everything you want anytime that you want to say it. Now, the reason I bring up all of the methods of communication is because I want to ask Clemson fans a question. We've talked about this in the beginning of the season. I asked you, Clemson fans, I asked you to define success when we started this season. I asked you to tell me, what is your definition of success? And I did that for a reason. The reason that I asked you to define success was so at the end of the year, we would have the Fan Upstate metric of whether success or failure was obtained by the Clemson Tiger program. Now, this wasn't just an exercise in evaluating the program. It was also an exercise in evaluating Dabo Swinney. It was an exercise in evaluating the Dabo way. It was an exercise in evaluating whether or not the way that Dabo Swinney has elected to run his football program, which is with an old school college football mentality. That is not to say that Dabo won't use the transfer portal, but he's not going to lean on it. Dabo has said time after time, including directly to me on this show in the past, Dabo has said, hey, we bring in guys that we believe will be successful. We bring in guys that we believe are Clemson football players. We bring in guys that we believe we can develop. We don't see the need to go get a guy who did not sign on to be a Clemson football player that wants to come here after he's played somewhere else. And that's fine. It is his football program to run as he chooses. But when you see other programs like Georgia, like Alabama, like Ohio State, when you see other programs that are leaning into the portal, when you see other programs that are busting it to generate NIL opportunities for their players, when you look at the way that other coaches that are in the hunt to be the best in the game are running their program, I think it is fair to say that this year is a referendum on Dabo Swinney. We are now 3 years into the NIL and transfer portal era. And I have said this. This has been my kind of operating perspective, if you will. When a coach gets hired into a college football program, at least before the NIL and the portal era, traditionally we have said, you have 3 years to show us an upward trajectory, and we need to see success in year number four. If you do not show us an upward trajectory in 3 years, you are gone. If you do not show us success in year four, you are gone. Because at that point, you will have cycled out the guys that were left over from the last coaching staff and cycled in an entire roster of your own dudes that you get to pick and recruit. You got to show me success. Well, this is the end of year three in the transfer portal in the NIL era. This is the year that I think we can gauge whether or not a coach is able to successfully navigate this new era of college football. And I told you when the NIL and the portal era kicked off, I was already here. I told you when it kicked off, there's going to be a lot of coaches who fail to adapt to this new era of college football. There are going to be a lot of coaches that just cannot get it. That happens in every industry. Every industry, at some point, there is a revolution. There is a new era that comes on the scene. I'll give you one right now because I was hands-on when this was happening. There was a point in time about 8-9 years ago where television channels began to recognize that just putting a news broadcast on TV ain't going to do it for you anymore. You've got to be reaching out to people across the internet. You've got to have a website that is constantly updated with news stories and pictures and videos that they can't get anywhere else. You've got to have social media for all of your on-air personalities so fans can interact with them. And you have to use all of that to drive people to the primary product. It doesn't work without it anymore. And there were a lot of television personalities who just could not get with it. They just couldn't do it. They didn't want to do social media. They refused to do it. Once they got on social media, they couldn't figure out how to make it work. And those people got effectively phased out of television, right? College football is no different. I told you then there are going to be guys that are going to get phased out of college football because they just cannot figure out or refuse to figure out this new era. Well, this year feels to me as if it is a referendum on whether or not Dabo can successfully thrive in the new era without, I won't say refusing to utilize, but without actively engaging with these new resources. A, do you guys feel the same way? And B, if you do, is this ACC title game tomorrow night in Charlotte, North Carolina, a referendum on whether or not Dabo is capable of doing it anymore in the new age of college football? And if he loses this game to SMU, does not win the ACC and go to the College Football National Championship playoffs, will you be out? Or will you be ready to have a tough conversation? Clemson fans, I want your thoughts. When we come back, let's talk about the game itself. Let's break down the X's and O's of the ACC title game next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday. Friday, got to get down on Friday, and the Rob Brown Show continues. Let's talk SMU and Clemson. Let's talk ACC title game breakdown. And let us start with the guy that I think is the key to this game. The key to this game is Kevin Jennings, is the quarterback of the SMU Mustangs. And here is why. I told you about this earlier in hour number one. We just kind of touched on it. Let's go into a little bit more detail here. Do you know what Kevin Jennings is? Kevin Jennings is skinny Lenora Sellers. Okay? So if Lenora Sellers was able to give you the problems that he gave you, if you are Clemson's defense. Then you can go ahead and rest assured that Kevin Jennings will too. Now, there is one primary difference between them. As I just mentioned, Kevin Jennings is the thin, the skinny version of Lenora Sellers. Lenora Sellers goes 6'3", 242. He is, as the kids say, with a couple of C's on the end. Kevin Jennings ain't. Kevin Jennings goes 6'1", 189. But I would also make the argument that Kevin Jennings is faster than Lenora Sellers. This year, and yes, I know, it was in the Southeastern Conference, so it's a little bit different. But Lenora Sellers ran for roughly 500 fewer yards than Kevin Jennings. 500 fewer yards than Kevin Jennings did. That's 2.5 Clemson games worth of yards. Kevin Jennings this year is looking at 2,700 passing yards. Lenora Sellers, 2,200 passing yards. Kevin Jennings threw for 19 touchdowns this year. Lenora Sellers, 17. Kevin Jennings and Lenora Sellers both threw 7 interceptions. Kevin Jennings had a 74.1 season-long QBR. That is the 24th in America. Lenora Sellers, a 70.3 QBR. That is good for 36th in the country. In terms of rushing yards, I said rushing yards a minute ago. I meant passing yards. I apologize. Kevin Jennings threw for 500 more yards than Lenora Sellers did. Looking at the individual statistics on the ground, this year, Lenoris ran 155 times for 655 yards, Jennings 83 times for 344 yards. Lenora Sellers rushed for 7 touchdowns, Kevin Jennings ran for 4 rushing touchdowns. So Lenoris has got better rushing stats than Kevin Jennings. But Jennings has dramatically better passing stats than Lenora Sellers does. He has a better QBR. He has more touchdowns. He has 500 more passing yards. Just about every metric, with the exception of interceptions, where these two quarterbacks are tied, just about every other metric is roughly identical. Roughly identical. So because of that, I do think that there is some concern. Here it is. After going back and rewatching the Palmetto Bowl a couple of times and flipping from watching it as somebody who was enjoying a great game to flipping it and watching it as somebody who knows ball, I have an issue. That issue was with the way that Wes Goodwin was running the Clemson defense. Now, there are times when the elementary level thought is the right thought. There are times when complex thoughts are the correct solution. Sometimes you really got to come up with a solution to figure it out. But there are other times when the simple thought's the right thought. The Occam's razor of football. Sometimes the thought that requires the littlest amount of mental capacity, sometimes that's the right way to handle business. And I feel like Clemson's defense against South Carolina left a lot to be desired. Now, you held that team to 17 points. And if your offense is clicking, keeping a team to 17 should be enough to win you this game. It just should. There are problems with the offense, and we're going to come to those here in just a minute as well. But when I look at Clemson's defense in this game, allowing Lenora Sellers to rush for 166 yards, I noticed something. Very rarely was there a commitment to keeping Lenora Sellers from running the ball wherever he wanted to. Now, it got a little bit better later in the game, but at that point, Lenora had been approaching and passing the century mark on the ground. But on that last drive, on the game-winning drive for the Gamecocks, there were a couple of plays where there was a spy on Lenora Sellers, but more often than not, Wes Goodwin was dropping guys back in the middle of the field. It felt to me as if the game plan there was to take away the short pass from Lenora Sellers and to say, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us down the field. The problem is that by opening the door for a quarterback to beat you down the field, sometimes it opens the door for them to beat you with the legs. This is what the Ravens for years have done with Lamar Jackson. They have Lamar, who throws a hell of a lot more than a lot of you think that they do. This is why Lamar Jackson lives for those middle of the field throws. Lives for them. Because what the objective almost always is around Lamar Jackson is we want the defense to do one of two things. Let us live across the middle of the field. That's where Zay Flowers thrives as a crossing wide receiver. That's where Mark Andrews thrives as a tight end. They thrive on getting a defense to try to take away the middle of the field. Because if you are dialed in on taking away the middle of the field, you do one of two things. Number one, you allow Lamar Jackson clean looks at wide receivers in one-on-one coverage down the field, which he's got a cannon. He's going to uncork one. Or you allow them to run guys down the field to draw that middle of the field defense into a situation of comfort, and then they go to the designed Lamar Jackson runs. It's very similar what Dowell Loggins was doing with Lenora Sellers in this game. Kevin Jennings can do that too. Now again, like Lamar Jackson, Kevin Jennings prefers to throw the football. SMU prefers for him to stay in the pocket and throw the football. And again, my guy weighs 180 pounds. They don't want to run him down the field unless they absolutely have to, but they will. They will. They're not going to run nearly as many designed runs for Kevin Jennings as South Carolina will for Lenora Sellers. They will run him. But Jennings is a guy that they are more often going to say, we're going to roll the pocket right. We're going to roll the coverage right. We're going to roll the protection right. We're going to roll the play to the right. And then we're going to evaluate what the defense is doing. And if the commitment from the defense is to keep the middle of the field clogged up and demand that if Kevin Jennings is going to beat you, he's going to beat you down the field, if that is the commitment from the defense, then Kevin Jennings takes off. Then he says, all right, you're not going to keep a linebacker trained on me. Okay, cool. I'll go pick up four or five and I'll slide and I'll keep my yards per carry up over that five mark and we'll be fine. And if you are going to keep a linebacker trained on me, great. The middle of the field is opened up and SMU is going to live in that area. The problem that I had with the way the defense was playing against Lenora Sellers was that you should have been less afraid of Lenora's uncorking a deep ball. Something that, if we're keeping it a buck, he hasn't been excellent with. He's been okay. But outside of Nick Harbor doing freak athlete things down the field, he's an okay down the field passer. He's not bad, but he's not excellent. He's okay. If I was Clemson, I would have worried less about getting beat deep. And I would have worried more about getting beat by the legs of Lenora Sellers. I would have kept the middle of the field clogged with an extra guy up whose one job was to... And until you start showing me that the wide receiver can consistently beat my defensive backs, and until you start showing me that Lenora Sellers can consistently deliver him the ball, and by the way, while I have a guy whose one job is to headhunt Lenora Sellers, until you show me that he can consistently beat us that way, I'm coming after him. I hope that you figured that out. The good news here for Clemson's defensive side of the football is that what you're going to see out of Kevin Jennings is very similar to what you saw out of Lenore's. Fewer design runs and a lot more slippery of a runner. Kevin Jennings at 189 pounds does not want to run into and through contact the way that Lenora Sellers does. We have seen that Lenora Sellers is more than happy when he gets, say, on the sideline to put the head and the shoulder pads down and to battering ram his way to an extra yard and a half or 2 yards on a carry. Kevin Jennings isn't going to do that. What Kevin Jennings wants to do is make yak a category he has no yards in. He don't want yak. He don't want to get hit. He don't want contact. He don't want to have to go pick up yards after contact. He wants to avoid contact. That's why you're going to have fewer design runs, but it is also why you have got to play, and I mean this both in terms of your tactics and your execution of them, fundamentally stout defense. Fundamentally stout defense. I am talking about consistently good open field tackling. I am talking about when Jennings is approaching the line of scrimmage, break down, drop the hips, lower the center of gravity, and be ready for a directional change immediately. With Lenora Sellers, more often than not, when he gets to the outside, you know the angle he's taking. And he is going to take that angle, and he is going to try to overpower you through that angle. So you meet him, and you contact him hard, and you see who wins. Jennings is going to take an angle, and then once you commit, he's going to try to change that angle on you. He's going to try to commit you to going left, and he's going to cut back to the right. You cannot commit to Kevin Jennings and hitting him as hard as you can the way you have to with Lenoris. So the tactics are going to be very similar, assuming Wes Goodwin figured that out. Because I'll tell you, and I wasn't the only one who said that. Joey B texted me after the show. He's a Clemson guy. He had this take. My buddy Tommy's a Clemson guy. He texted me after the game. He had this take. In fact, both of those guys and others had the take that, regardless of what you do with any other spots on the field, they're ready to move on from Wes Goodwin. I honestly believe that Wes Goodwin, exponentially more than Dabo Swinney, Wes Goodwin is coaching for his job this weekend. If you lose this game because Kevin Jennings pops off on you, and we all come back on Monday to talk about this game, and when we all come back on Monday to talk about this game, we all are all circling a lack of defensive tactics that make sense, a lack of defensive tactics that work, then at that point, I think it would have you'd have to make a shift. At that point, you'd have to make a change. I think that, I think that's where you are with this. So, the way Clemson wins this game on the defensive side of the football to me is going to be anticipate you are going to see a lot of the same you saw last week out of South Carolina, but with a more agile quarterback, with a quarterback who's going to rely a lot more on cutting with the football than Lenora Sellers did. With a quarterback who is going to run, not as much, but when he does, it's going to be less about yak and more about making you make mistakes in your defensive execution and then taking advantage of those. The game plan is going to be very similar. The execution's got to be different. I am interested in seeing how it is that this Clemson defense decides that they are going to guard Kevin Jennings. Do you put a spy on him? Again, it's kind of like going back to the, I'm not comparing him, but it's kind of like going back to the Michael Vick days back in the day. The simple solution is what? You put a spy on Mike Vick. You have a guy whose only job, his only responsibility is to stop Michael Vick from running the football. Doesn't mean you can. He's still Michael Vick. But you have to do it. Even if it's not going great, you still have to do it. Because when you stop putting a spy on Michael Vick, when you do not have someone whose responsibility is the quarterback run, you're getting cooked. At the very least, have a guy whose job is to slow down Michael Vick so the rest of the defense can take a pursuit angle and you can try to keep him from gashing you. But when you stop doing that, this was something NFL teams did in Vick's prime. They stopped putting a spy on him. They went, we don't have a guy that can match Michael Vick stride for stride. So instead, we're going to actually layer the middle of the field with defenders, and wherever Vick goes, take a hard pursuit angle. And that's where Vick started beating you with that cannon of an arm. Jennings has got a good arm. It's not a cannon, but he's got a good arm. But it doesn't matter. If you don't find a way to keep a guy who carried the ball 83 times this season. Again, Lenoris carried it 155 times. If you don't keep somebody from taking that availability from Kevin Jennings, saying, you know what? If you're going to beat us, it ain't going to be with your legs, fella. It's going to be with the arm. Whether it's a cannon shot or you're just chipping away in the middle of the field. If you're going to beat us, you're going to do it with your arm, not your legs. He'll beat you with the legs. And again, this game is a referendum on Dabo Swinney. In my opinion, this game is a referendum on Dabo Swinney. But I think it is the same, if not a bigger referendum on Wes Goodwin, to tell you the truth. All right. There's some Clemson SMU talk for you. When we come back to open up the 8 o'clock hour, we got your audio blitz, best audio we have heard, including a couple of takes off the Ray Memorial Hotline, which has picked up business this week. We have got coming up at the 8 o'clock, excuse me, at the 9 o'clock hour, Kevin and John from Moving the Chains to break us down on our state semis, our upper state championship games, and Chapel Fowler from the state joins us after that to preview and get his thoughts on the ACC title game as well. All of that coming up after Lonzo makes sweet, sweet audio love to your ear holes with his Sports Flash.
Ew. That's disgusting. The Detroit Tigers converted a fourth down with less than a minute to play on their way to a game-winning field goal and a 34-31 victory over Green Bay last night. Jared Goff was 32-41 for 283 yards, three touchdowns, and one pick in the win. Detroit improves 12-1 on the season. South Carolina Gamecock women's basketball team knocked off number 8 Duke last night, 81-70. The Gamecocks were led by Chloe Kitts, 21 points and 11 boards. Every South Carolina player scored, including 30 points from bench players. The Gamecocks recorded 13 takeaways and 8 blocks in the contest. Carolina Hurricanes recorded win number 17 last night with a 5-3 victory over the Colorado Avalanche, which ends a 3-game losing streak. Tune in tomorrow, 11:30, as Furman Paladins take on the Princeton Tigers. It's Furman versus Princeton right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball. The Fan, Upstate.